నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. What is the text? Chapter number? 1730. Yeah. Text number 1734. Shibiraya Nishantam రజ్వాబద్వారి పుంబలాన్ ప్రాహార్జునం ప్రకుపితో భగవానంబుజక్షణః. బట్ అర్జునస్ ఐస్ వర్ లైక్ బాల్స్ ఆఫ్ రెడ్ కాపర్, వెరస్ ద ఐస్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ వర్ లైక్ లోటసెస్. దిస్ మీన్స్ దట్ ద యాంగ్రీ మూడ్ ఆఫ్ అర్జున and that of the Lord are not on the same level. The Lord is transcendence, and thus he is absolute in any stage. His anger is not like the anger of a conditioned living being within the modes of qualitative material nature. Because he is absolute, both his anger and pleasure are the same. His anger is not exhibited in the three modes of material nature. It is only a sign of his bent of mind towards the cause of his devotee, because that is his transcendental nature. Therefore, even if he is angry, the object of anger is blessed. He is unchanged in all circumstances. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuvan Militamye తస్మై శ్రీ గురవే నమః. వి ఆర్ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ ద చాప్టర్ ద సన్ ఆఫ్ ద్రోణ పనిష్డ్ అండ్ ద ప్రీవియస్ వర్స్ వి రెడ్ అర్జున హిస్ ఐస్ బ్లేజింగ్ ఇన్ యాంగర్ లైక్ టూ రెడ్ బాల్స్ ఆఫ్ కాపర్ dexterously arrested the son of Gautami and bound him with ropes like an animal. After binding Ashwatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to a military camp. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, looking on with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna, and it goes like this. So here is a comparison made between the Lord's anger and Arjuna's anger. So there is a comparison made between the mundane anger and the transcendental anger. So Prabhupada explains the symptoms of mundane anger, how Arjuna's eyes are described in the previous verse. Tamra akshaha. The word tamra akshaha is used. భవందామర్ష తామ్ర అక్షః పశం రశనయా యథా. సో తామ్ర అక్ష మీన్స్ విత్ కాపర్ రెడ్ ఐస్. ఆన్ ది అదర్ హ్యాండ్ ద లార్డ్స్ ఐస్ ఆర్ సెడ్ టు బి అంబుజే క్షణ. అంబుజ మీన్స్ లోటస్. The Lord's eyes are called as the lotus eyes, and Arjuna's eyes are called as Tamraksha. So Prabhupada, while making the comparison, says how Lord's anger is not like the anger of an ordinary living entity. Lord's anger is different, and it is also transcendental and divine. Anger often is condemned in the scriptures. We will find as one of the lower natures. In fact, Bhagavad Gita strongly advocates giving up of anger in many places. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yatachetasam. 5.26 I think, is it? Yeah. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yatachetasam. So one should become a kama krodha vimukta, means one should become free from kama and krodha. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, there are three gateways to the hell that are given. So, scriptures often talk of the door to hell and door to liberation. So, there are three doors to hell. What are they? Kamam, krodham, tata lobas, tasmat, etat, trayam, tyajet. Tyajet means one should give them up. Trividam, narakasyedam, dwaram, nashanam, atmanah. Kamam, krodham, tata lobas, tasmat, etat, trayam, tyajet. So, he says that this is actually Trividam Narakasyedam. Narakasyedam means actually it's door to hell and these three should be given up. So, in this way, the anger is condemned because the natural disposition of a person in the liberated state is of equanimity, equipoise nature, where one treats the sukha and dukkha alike. In an equal way. Shita, Ushna, Man, Apaman. So one should see these things. You all can keep your mobiles in vibrating mode. So one should be equanimous in all the situations. Like whether one is honored with respect or one is dishonored. Or one is attaining some pleasure. Or one is faced with suffering. Tulya Ninda Stutir Mauni. So Ninda and Stuti one should see alike. So that is prescribed in Gita. And one should not unnecessarily become angry. Why one should not become angry? There are many qualities mentioned in the Gita which are detrimental to one's spiritual progress. That make one forget one's real identity as a soul. When one is equipoised in that calm disposition, one can understand the spiritual truths much better. Like for example, the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is actually not a transcendental position, but it is a nice springboard from where one can go to transcendental position. Just like for example, one can go from Pune to Bombay in a cycle or in a car or in a plane. But all of them take different times. Because in cycle you have to pedal, you have to suffer. So it's troublesome. But if you can go by plane, you can reach very fast. But for going by plane, you have to go to the airport. Unless you go to airport, you cannot take off from there. Similarly, the mode of goodness is like going to the airport, going to the platform of goodness. And then from there, one can take off to the transcendence. One can elevate oneself to spiritual world very easily. Sometimes devotees may argue, where is it said that it is mandatory for one to attain mode of goodness in order to attain transcendence? We hear of so many asuras and so many people with demoniac qualities later on transforming into devotees, completely transformed. You find people with in mode of passion, mode of ignorance, suddenly they become transcendental and divine. So what is the need of emphasizing on mode of goodness? So sometimes devotees argue that our activities are transcendental, or we don't need to behave in mode of goodness. Once Burujan Prabhu was asking this question to Prabhupada in a class. Prabhupada, you are saying that devotees should act in mode of goodness, but actually we have heard always from your books that devotees act on a transcendental platform. And Prabhupada said, generally devotees act in mode of goodness, but when the occasion warrants, they will act transcendentally, he said. Vasudev, generally he acts in mode of goodness, he is very honest in his dealings with Kamsa. But when the occasion warranted, when Krishna was born, he acted transcendently by cheating Kamsa and taking Krishna to Gokul. Isn't it? So, devotees generally act on a platform of goodness at normal times, Prabhupada said. Why? Because it is very conducive to go to the platform of transcendence. So devotees normally act in that platform. But a devotee will never, in the name of acting, in the name of goodness, will become a mundane moralist. Like, you know, once somebody was talking to Prabhupada and he was telling, Swamiji, in this way, if the, as you often say, the world will become Krishna conscious. All living beings will become free from anger and, you know, there will be peace everywhere. And Prabhupada said, you say they ought to become free from anger? Prabhupada said, there is nothing bad with anger. Prabhupada said, the whole Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Lord Krishna to incite anger in the heart of Arjuna, to make him fight. So, Prabhupada told him that anger or no anger, the purpose should be to serve Krishna and not otherwise. Many of the mundane moralist people, they cannot understand this, what is being spoken. So, they only know about mundane moral principle of speaking sweetly and not becoming angry, which is also necessary. But that's not the ultimate when it comes to the service of Krishna. So, Prabhupada there speaks about the transcendental anger. He talks about that. That a devotee will utilize anything that is needed to serve the Lord at the appropriate hour. So, in that way, in the name of acting, in the name of goodness, a devotee will not fail to act transcendently. Similarly, in the name of acting transcendently, a devotee will never, claiming oneself to be transcendental, act in passion. So, that is also to be understood. Because sometimes we may proclaim our lower natures, we may justify our lower natures by claiming ourselves to be transcendental. Isn't it? It's very likely. Whether it be lust or pride or anger. So, one should not proclaim oneself to be transcendental by exhibiting uncontrolled mind and senses that bring out rage and anger and aggression. So, both have to be understood. To begin with, we are talking about mundane anger. Mundane anger is certainly to be given up. Otherwise, why is Lord Krishna saying, Trividam narakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmaha? It certainly is a gateway to hell. Because the anger is in a mode of passion and it leads to aggression, aggressive behavior. How the anger acts in us, we can see easily. Prabhupada talks in one of the purports of Bhagavatam. Both anger and happiness. Prabhupada says how it gets manifested in a person. He says, first, the mind gets disturbed. And things begin with the mind. And there is a calmness in the mind, but suddenly the mind gets disturbed when something unpleasant happens. Something that one does not like happens. Mind becomes disturbed. And mind is disturbed immediately. The symptoms show up. The eyes become red. And one's nose may start vibrating, lips may quiver, isn't it? Chest starts palpitating fast, more faster than normal, isn't it? And then this is the anger builds up. And then it comes in the tongue, the words. It is said, you know, what is it verse? Karagre Vasite Lakshmi? No, there is one. Jihvagre Vasate Lakshmi, there is one verse in which it says that your money, friends and happiness all reside based on the words that reside in your tongue. It is said. Which means a person who has a sweet tongue will be able to get money, people and happiness, all these things. A person who has a sweet tongue. And a person who has a very sharp tongue, a bitter tongue, the very same tongue can speak words which will create enmity with everyone in this world. Everyone and everything will go away, it is said. So, first from the mind, the anger is transferred to the tongue. And then, when one angrily pronounces something and still One of the natures of anger is that it's like you see, like a scorpion bite, you see. A scorpion bites a person, it just keeps throbbing. It keeps throbbing more and more. It doesn't stop very easily. Similarly, the anger gets more and more wound up. It begins with rajaguna and ends in tamaguna. It begins with passion and ends in ignorance. And you can see the result of anger is destruction. You can see, it is even said, if somebody becomes a spiritualist, it's not that one can be freed from anger. Many of the mystic yogis, it is said Lord Rudra resides in their heart of a mystic yogi. It is said about Durvasamani, when he became angry with Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj was a very great devotee. And Durvasamani had become very critical with him. So Lord Rudra resides, one of the 11 Rudras, Lord resides in the heart of a mystic yogi. By dint of their austerities, their anger is aroused. Because they suppress the mind and senses, which try to get vent in another way, as false pride or as anger, it can come. So, such anger when improperly, an irregular fashion is let out, it can cause disaster, like a flood, it can cause a great disaster. So, anger leads to destruction. That's why it ends in ignorance, you will see. So, Lord Shiva, for example, became angry on Madan and he burnt him to ashes. And Lord Shiva employs his anger also at the time of cosmic annihilation to destroy the whole creation. One can see that. So, this kind of anger that begins with passion, agitating the mind. Mind is like a very calm lake. Suddenly it is agitated. Then huge tides and waves rise in the mind. And gradually, oneself loses one's equilibrium by that mental disturbance. And then it becomes like a huge tide in the mind. And then causing trouble to oneself and trouble to others. Sometimes the anger can cause terrible results. Like it's a real story which happened in Bombay. A fight that happened between husband and wife. So husband has been having fight for 2-3 days with the wife. One of the days in the morning he said, "Today you have not put salt in the food because you wanted to put me in trouble." She said, "I forgot." He said, "How can you forget?" And she said, "Okay, I didn't forget. I purposely didn't put salt. Eat it." She said. So this fellow picked her up and threw her out of the window. Can you imagine? In great anger. He picked her up and pushed her out of the window from a third floor or fourth floor in Bombay. So, when one becomes angry, first it begins in the mind, then it comes in the tongue, and then thirdly, it comes in action. One can see that it goes to action. Because all the blood flows to the tip of the fingers and hand. One wants to pick up some object and beat a person or hit a person or do some physical. So to subdue the other person and to prove that the other person is inferior and I am superior. That's how the anger comes. Until things are destroyed, enough damage is done, then the anger may subside probably. So it is said, when emotion arises, the intelligence, it escapes out of the window, it is said. When one goes by the emotions, then the intelligence says bye-bye or goodbye and it goes away. And then after one causes sufficient damage, then intelligence comes back and calls one a fool. Why did you foolishly act like this? So in order to retain one's intelligence, one should not go by such lower natures like the anger or envy. Because sometimes in anger we say some things for which we will regret later. I should not have said this. I spoke like this. Sometimes you speak something to somebody in anger and that person goes and tells other people and you have to run behind him and say, "Don't tell everyone about this." Isn't it? You have to catch his tail or you have to give him some gifts and keep him quiet. Don't tell this to anybody. So, we can easily see that how the anger makes a person behave foolishly for which one will regret later. So, that means what we learn from this is one has to make a strenuous endeavor to control anger and keep one's mental disposition in the platform of goodness. That is why we try to find out ways and means, in all possible ways we keep our life simple. Because all the material things of the world have a nature that they cause greediness, they cause confusion, they cause quarrel, they cause fight and everything. For example, money causes quarrel. In this way, all the things of the world, that's why we keep our lives very, very simple. Like when we become more and more materialistic, then to that degree the greed and anger are also more and more. They also increase more and more. So we keep people, especially spiritualists, they keep their life pretty simple. Minimum contact with matter and whatever is needed to keep body and soul together. So there is no greed, there is no anger. But still, even one who is like a beggar, who has nothing, still can become angry, as we said, when he is insulted or something like that. And one is personally insulted. It is only what Prabhupada says, when you give a lecture, you say, you will become a hog or you will become a dog. Immediately, people become angry. Prabhupada says, why is the Swamiji saying such bad words about me? And Prabhupada says, see, because they identify with the body, they think they are very great. So everyone thinks, I am this body and I am very great. When they understand I am not the body, they won't identify with the body. It arises from false ego. The anger arises from false ego, Prabhupada says. So, when the anger arises from false ego, and the anger is in a mundane platform, arising from one's ahankar, then, as Prabhupada explains, all these symptoms manifest, like the coppery eyes or reddish eyes or heart beating faster. Actually, as far as Arjuna is concerned, Arjuna is a very great devotee of the Lord and certainly he is never conducted by mode of passion. But Srila Prabhupada, in his purports, many places you will find Prabhupada explains that Arjuna is portraying the role of a conditioned soul for our benefit. Like in Bhagavad Gita, you find Prabhupada saying Arjuna is not ready to fight. Why? Because he is attached to his relatives. Due to mundane attachment, he is not ready to fight. Another purport Prabhupada will say, Arjuna refuses to fight. Why? Because he is a soft-hearted devotee of the Lord. Prabhupada says both. You will see that. Why Prabhupada is saying two different things? One is right or both are right, or which one of us is right? You may have a question. You can understand that certainly Arjuna is a devotee. Due to soft-heartedness, he did not want to fight. That's the correct understanding. But Prabhupada also explains the other thing about Arjuna not wanting to fight because of material attachment. That is for our, for us to learn a lesson. Because Arjuna is doing a drama for the pleasure of Krishna, portraying the role of a conditioned soul. So similarly, when we read such purports like this, we have to know that when my eyes become reddish, and when I am speaking scorching words, what is that verse? Krodha parushyamevacha ajnanam chabijatasya bharta sampada masurim. What is that verse? Dambo tarpu abhimanascha krodha parushyamevacha. Harshness of speech and anger and all this are categorized under asurim, asuri sampat. Asuri sampat means demoniac assets. So when we lose control of our mind and senses and we are unable to contain ourselves, actually we all should see it in our own system. Sometimes when you are incited by anger, the lips are quivering and you are not able to contain yourself. It keeps coming again and again. Repeatedly it keeps coming and then one wants to act. In such cases it is said it's better that one does not make any decision when one is in anger. One should not make any sudden decision. We make snap decisions when we are angry. Why we should not make decisions when we are angry? You know, when people write their will, it is said, I am writing this will when I am not drunk, when I am not coaxed by anyone to write, and when I am not in an angry mood, or when I am not blackmailed by someone or whatever. Sometimes people write like that. Why? Because when a person is in an angry mood, it's very likely that he will make a wrong decision, a person. Because Like for example, in anger, one is in a destructive mood. One like Rudra does samhar, the material one. So one is more interested in causing damage than good in angry mode. So only in mode of goodness then one wants to maintain. Whereas in tamaguna, one wants to destroy everything. So that is why one should make a strenuous effort to control these three things, kama, krodha and lobha. And all these three things have a nature that you incite them, you trigger them up, and they build up, and they can grow to monstrous proportions if they are not controlled in time. So the first step is we have to admit, yes, we have the lower natures in us. We are not free from them. We are a slave to the lower natures. Time to time we may be incited by, these three things may be incited, kama, krodha and lobha. When we honestly admit, that itself is a half success. We have succeeded them 50%. So then after admitting them, one should be prepared to face them when one is faced with anger suddenly. Like you can see great personalities like Dhruva Maharaj, he became angry. And you know, senior personalities like Kubera and Swayambhu Manu, they personally came and they privately sorted it out. They called them, told the Dhruva Maharaj, give up this anger. It doesn't make sense. Just because, you know, one yaksha killed your brother, you want to wipe out the yaksha's race? This doesn't make any sense. This is atiroshena. Atiroshena, they said. Atiroshena means this is too much anger, or it can be called as it's a excessive anger, which is not a deserving anger. So sometimes we get disturbed at little things. So that is atiroshena. He explained to him and he told him to be calm down. So Indra also got atiroshena. Indra also, due to excessive anger, he showered that rain in Vrindavan to give some trouble to his vasis. Actually, he didn't give rain so that they will get water. He wanted to use water to beat the Vajibhasis and the animals in Vrindavan. He wanted to use water as a medium to beat them up and cause them suffering like that. That's also atiroshena. So, these things are all said in the scriptures because such kind of excessive anger, it submerges us in ignorance. And when we are in ignorance, then how can we think of God? It's just not possible to focus the mind. Actually, in Bhagavad Gita, not only it is said that we should become free from anger, it is also said, don't unnecessarily incite anger in others also. It is said, anudvega karam vakyam, satyam prahicham yat. It is said, anudvega karam vakyam, speak in such a way that it unnecessarily doesn't incite anger in others. So, that is also a part of Vedic culture, that we try to speak to others in such a way that others also will be able to maintain their equanimity and their equilibrium. And we should not derive some fun in making others angry. Sometimes people like, you know what he told about you? They go and incite anger in others. Or he did this to you. And when they see that anger is incited in the other person, they feel very happy. That's very good. Now I have done a good job. Like mantra coming and troubling Kaikeyi. Like that. So that is also said. Why? Because ultimately every soul has to get liberated from this world and they have to become free from these diseases. While speaking about mundane anger, we also certainly have to talk about the transcendental anger. What the Lord feels or what the devotee feels. Lord Narasimhadev exhibited transcendental anger. It was such a terrible anger. It's not that the Lord can never have reddish eyes. As soon as you have reddish eyes, it is mode of passion. No. Lord can have reddish eyes and still he can be not in passion at all. Still he can be on a transcendental platform. Like you see Balaram, for example, when he becomes angry, he can have reddish eyes. That doesn't make him come down to passion. Because Lord always is situated on a transcendental platform. There is no difference between Lord's anger and Lord's love. There is no difference between Lord killing someone and embracing someone. It's the same thing. Like Lord is cutting the neck of Shishupal. And what is the result of such an act? Shishupal gets liberation. You see? That means Lord apparently performs an act which appears to be out of envy or anger, but the result is glorious. Like you see, Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Narasimhadeva, but what was the result? He attained liberation. If Lord didn't kill him in that way, Hiranyakashipu was heading towards hell for all the trouble he created for the people and especially for Prahalad. He was going towards hell and Lord actually delivered him by killing him. So Lord's killing and Lord's offering love, there is no difference, because the absolute truth, Lord being the absolute truth, he can never have any vengeance towards his own part and parcels. It's impossible. Nobody will want to take a sword and cut off one's own hand. One will never do that. Because it's your own part of your body. So Lord will never want to harm any of the living entities himself. Why should he ever do that? In fact, he loves every living being as his own part and parcel. So, still the Lord exhibits transcendental anger when he comes as Narasimhadeva in order to show the world how much he loves his devotee, Prahalad. In order to show that. In fact, Lord's transcendental anger was understood only by Prahalad and no one else. Even Goddess of Fortune Lakshmiji, overpowered by the Leela Shakti, she pretended to be forgetful of the Lord. And then when Brahma wanted her to go, she was even afraid to go. She said, I have never seen my husband in this angry mood. She didn't want to go near. Actually, all the demigods also fear. All this is supposed to add to the glory of Prahalad. That is the purpose. Why the demigods are fearful? Why Lakshmiji is fearful? Ultimately, Lord wants to glorify Prahalad, to make the world understand how Prahalad is such a surrendered devotee of the Lord, although he was only a small boy. He takes a garland and goes and puts on the neck of Lord Narasimhadeva. And he is telling also, not only he is going and putting the garland on the Lord's neck and running away from there, because Brahmaji told him, you told me to go, I put the garland and I have done my job now, enough. He didn't run away. He sang a very beautiful verse. Naham bibhemya jitateti bhayanakasya jehuvarka netra bruguti rabasogradamstrat antrasrajakshata jakeshara shanku karna nirhada bhita digiva arivhinakagrat. He is saying, Naham bibhemi means I am not at all afraid. He is saying, Naham bibhemi ajitateti bhayanakasya. Although you appear to be bhayanaka to all the world, for me, you are not at all fearful, my dear Lord, he says. Although your mane is soaked with blood, and your sharp teeth and, sword type of tongue, which is constantly oscillating, and your short neck, and your big glowing eyes that is stealing the light of the luminaries in the sky, and your long flowing hair that is driving away the clouds, this fearsome form and your nails, sharp nails, all these things may cause fear to someone. For me, they are not at all fearsome. Prahlad says that. So this is Prahlad. Because he is able to understand that the Lord's anger is transcendental anger. It's divine anger. Lord is angry because his devotee is being mistreated by the Hiranyakashipu. So Prahlad was never afraid. In fact, Prahlad knew that his father will be liberated by being touched by the Lord, by being killed by the Lord. He was very, very confident. Now, not only the Lord exhibits anger as Narasimhadeva or as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he comes, he calls for the chakra to kill Jagai Madai. So Prabhupada says that Lord is saying, Srinadhupi Shunichena, Tararupi Saishuna. He gave such nice verses to the world and he himself is taking a chakra and going to kill. He becomes so angry. Is there no contradiction in Lord's behavior? He says one thing and does another thing. Then Prabhupada explains, no, Lord on his own personal account will never become angry. When Bhrigumuni kicked on the Lord's chest, did the Lord become angry? He wanted to massage his feet, saying that my heart is hard and your feet is soft, I'll massage your feet. And by putting your feet on my chest, you have sanctified this place So I'm very sure Goddess of Fortune Lakshmi will be very happy to come and reside in this place. And oh great Brahmana, you have sanctified my whole abode of Vaikuntha by your visit here. So these were the speeches of Lord. He is so utterly humble. He cannot be made angry. In fact, Bhugamani's eyes are brimming with tears, seeing the speech of the Lord. He understood. The Lord is always situated in Shuddha Sattva platform. He is ever cheerful. Prasanna Vaktram. If you see, the Lord is always happy, smiling, ever cheerful. He cannot be made angry at all by anyone. So many... That is why the Lord is able to maintain 16,000 wives. Otherwise, how? People sometimes marry, to manage one wife is very difficult. Generally, wives' demands are so high that husband generally becomes angry, and if he becomes angry, he will get one more taunt for that also. In this world, it is very difficult. Husband makes wife angry and wife makes husband angry in this world. You can see that in material relationships. But Krishna is maintaining, in Bhagavatam it is said, he is maintaining 16,108 wives, including wives like Satyabhama. You have to remember that. Because Lord is so mature, nobody can incite his anger very easily. But the same Lord will become angry when his devotee is insulted. That is why we sing, Haristane aparade tare harina, tomastane aparade nahi paritran. So, if somebody offends the Lord due to some reason by chanting the holy name, the effect of that offense of the Lord towards the Lord can be nullified. But when one offends a devotee, without getting forgiveness, there is no possibility of any freedom from that offense. So it's very strongly said, but offending so that's why the Lord takes it very personally. When when devotee is offended, Lord takes it very, very personally. But when Lord is offended, he doesn't become angry at all. You can see that. That is transcendental anger. Now, not only Lord exhibits transcendental anger, devotee also can exhibit transcendental anger. Even great devotees can become transcendently angry. Srila Prabhupada was very famous. Prabhupada used to become anger. Satyadas Maharaj has analyzed, even Shitakirti Prabhu also, analyzed the different stages of anger of Prabhupada. At the lowest level of anger, Prabhupada would speak, Prabhupada would scold. He would taunt a person strongly, chastise a person. He would do that. And that chastisement would be very blunt and straight on the face, teaching a strong lesson to the person. And beyond it, say, in the second level of anger, Prabhupada would become sarcastic. He would say some sarcastic statement to teach the person a good lesson. The third stage is a stage where devotees would see Prabhupada's lips would be quivering, Prabhupada's dilated eyes, and his nose would be throbbing, and Prabhupada would not speak a word. You would just see the thing and keep silent. Silent means it's heavy and grave, as grave as a mountain or an ocean. So nobody would dare to speak anything. If Prabhupada is not saying anything, that is the highest degree of anger. One can understand that. So, I have been reading different pastimes in different places. Whatever comes to my mind, I will try to express different stages of Prabhupada's transcendental anger. Once Prabhupada was living in the top of a building in one of the temples, while the disciples were living down, his personal servant and others, they were living down. So I don't want to take the names of the disciples because then it will cling to your mind. So, sometimes Prabhupada would give a bell from the top. So, when the bell would ring, immediately the disciple is supposed to go up. So, Harikesh Prabhu was cooking for Prabhupada in those days. So, Harikesh Prabhu was one day very sick. And he had told another devotee cook for Prabhupada. So that day the whole cooking started late, and Prabhupada used to take prasadam at 1:30 sharp. And Prabhupada was very punctual in taking prasadam in a particular time. So cooking was getting a bit late. And 1:30 it was supposed to get ready. It was halfway through. So the devotee who was cooking was thinking, in 5 minutes I'll finish up. And then I'll, take the prasadam to Prabhupada. So he thought 5 minutes, and it became 10 minutes, it became 15 minutes, it became 1:45. And immediately another devotee came running, saying that, hey, don't you hear? Since 1:30 Prabhupada is ringing the bell, again and again and again he is giving loud bell. In the sound of the kitchen he could not hear the bell sound. So he was saying, oh, immediately Prabhupada is very angry. So about 1:40 or 1:45 he went, taking all the cooked items, everything, he ran to the upstairs. And then he kept all the present in front of Prabhupada and offered obeisance. Prabhupada shouted. Prabhupada was wild, was angry. He said, what are you doing? Rascal, he shouted, scolded him. Now, since 1:30 I have been calling, you don't hear? And the devotee said, Prabhupada was cooking, Prabhupada got late. Then, actually Prabhupada asked, where is the prasad? And he said, I have brought the prasad. Who wants the prasad? Take it back. So Prabhupada was not ready to take prasad. So this devotee didn't know what to do, whether I should take it back or I should be there. Then this devotee offered obeisance and sought forgiveness. Prabhupada's anger, Prabhupada used to feel angry, but Prabhupada always demanded surrender and rectification immediately. Prabhupada would never appreciate a person giving any excuses. He never liked it. No excuses. Don't give excuses. If something is asked, you have to do that. If you have not done it, now you have to rectify the situation. So, this devotee was giving 2-3 excuses. He was telling Prabhupada, Harikeshpu got sick. Then Prabhupada even became more angry. Then he was telling Prabhupada, I was cooking. Cooking, keep the prasadam with yourself, I don't want. He said. And then this devotee at last surrendered. He told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, actually I should have come to you and told you at 1:30 that prasadam is not yet ready, it got a bit late. I would have given you the message. I'm very sorry. And then Prabhupada said, okay, bring the prasad. Said after that. Then Prabhupada accepted the prasad after that. So similarly, another time also when Prabhupada had, there was one devotee called Gunarnava, Prabhu in Vrindavan. So when Prabhupada came to Vrindavan, he was, in Vrindavan it used to be very chill, very, very chill in the morning. Water would be so cutting cold. In fact, all the devotees would heat the water and take bath in hot water. But when Prabhupada would want to take early bath, he would go to the bathroom, there would be no hot water, there would be chill water, cold water would be there. And Prabhupada would put the water in the mouth, it would be so chill, the whole mouth would become frozen. So he could not even brush the teeth with that. And every day Prabhupada had to ask, where is the hot water? One first day, second day, third day he was asking again and again. So there were a group of devotees there. Long list of names are given there. 3-4 devotees, all of them very big devotees. We don't want to name them now. So they were all there. Prabhupada asked, call all of them, call this fellow, call that fellow. Everyone. 4-5 of them came. And then Prabhupada asked, why? Where is hot water? Every day I have to call you, I have to tell you like this. Why don't you keep the hot water ready? Prabhupada shouting. And nobody had any answer to say. Everyone was pinpointing another person. Prabhupada. So Prabhupada then asked the then manager, he called the manager and asked. Everyone was pointing to the manager. And manager was pointing hand to another person. Prabhupada, I told him, he didn't do. And Prabhupada was so angry, he said, this kind of passing the buck habit, these Indians have learned from the British Raj. He said, when British people came here, they have taught this bad habit to Indians, that they always push the responsibility to others. And then Prabhupada told the manager, even if you give the service to someone else, that fellow is not responsible. You are responsible for that service. Because I told you, I didn't tell him, I told you. And Prabhupada said, and devotees were telling, nobody was ready to take responsibility of making the hot water. And because in those days, the construction was not fully finished. And there were many, many things half finished, and to get things ready was very difficult. So everyone was trying to escape, and they were afraid, if you take this responsibility, you may be fired. So they were not ready to take responsibility. Devotees were afraid. So Prabhupada observed this, and we can understand And Prabhupada was scolding this Gunanava, who was not there at that time. Prabhupada scolded him that this fellow is a rascal. What kind of construction he has done? He has half-finished things, and because of which nobody is able to fetch even a bucket of hot water and everything. So, later the same Prabhupada, he was sitting in the room and one of the devotees was massaging his head. So he asked, so how do you like our Vrindavan temple? He was seeing out of the window, the beautiful arches and everything that was done. So he was asking, so the devotee was saying, yes Prabhupada, it's very nice. And Prabhupada said, such a wonderful construction, isn't it? There is no temple like this, so beautiful like ours. The Gunanava has done a wonderful job. So that devotee was wondering, what is this? Prabhupada called him a rascal, he fired him in the morning. Evening Prabhupada is appreciating the building and the entrance and everything. He was wondering. So, we can understand that the spiritual master's anger is incidental. And it is meant for actually reforming the disciple. For correcting the disciple. And Prabhupada never liked devotees who were irresponsible. So he wanted them to take responsibility. He didn't want them to pass the buck to others, pushing the responsibility to others and saying that, you know, he will do it, and then keeps going round. So this is the anger where Prabhupada directly manifested. You can see that. And there are times when Prabhupada did not manifest anger directly like this, but he was sarcastic. For example, when Prabhupada was in America, in New Vrindavan, so he has been getting letters from India. Actually, at that time, there was no GVC available, GVC secretary in India. So, Prabhupada had put one person, Karandar. Actually, Karandar had left Krishna consciousness and come back again. And Prabhupada immediately made him GVC as soon as he came. So, he didn't want to be GVC. He wanted to, you know, be relieved of the service. And so, he wrote to Prabhupada giving a resignation, saying that I can't be GVC. So, at that time, there was no GVC in India. You can imagine how India would be running. And Prabhupada was talking to disciples in America. How are these projects going to go on in India? Maybe you think I should give up preaching in India? And Prabhupada was asking disciples. But the disciples were saying, no Prabhupada, but you have great love for India also. You have been always telling that you want to take all the white elephants back and you want to preach in India. Disciples were saying, but then how can we manage? I have Vrindavan, Mayapur, Juhu, three projects in India. And there is no GBC to run the show. Anyway, at that time, there was Gurudas Prabhu in Vrindavan. So, Gurudas Prabhu, Gunarnava Prabhu, and Surabhi Prabhu. Surabhi Prabhu was the architect of Vrindavan temple. And Gurudas Prabhu was the manager, top manager. And Gunarnava Prabhu was in charge of construction. So, they were all there in Vrindavan project. So, Prabhupada was getting news from Gurudas Prabhu directly. He was in touch with Gurudas Prabhu directly. So, Prabhupada asked, so, when are you opening the Vrindavan temple? And Gurudas Prabhu, everyone was afraid. Everyone knew that, you know, the construction won't be finished by Janmashtami time. But Gurudas Prabhu, out of fear for Prabhupada, he told Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, we can open the temple by Janmashtami. But let me tell you, the temple will not be fully complete. But it will be partially complete and at least the opening of the temple can be done, he had said. And Prabhupada was very happy. And Prabhupada sent a invitation to the international centers all over the world, calling all the devotees to come to Vrindavan. And along with Prabhupada also, 25-30 devotees are coming. Along with Prabhupada, it was the end of July. And Janmashtami was about to come. And Prabhupada was returning to India very happily that very soon they are going to open the temple. So when they came to the place where the temple was supposed to be there, when they came, lot of devotees surrounded Prabhupada and they were singing Jai Prabhupada, Shala Prabhupada, everything. And he came and saw there were walls which were constructed only up to the knee size. Walls were constructed, And everywhere there were heaps of sand, heaps of bricks lying here and there. And Prabhupada said, what is this? Where is the temple? He was asking. Then with all the disciples, he crossed over all the bricks and everything and he walked and he came to the place where the altar was supposed to be there. Even the altar was not ready. Even that was half constructed. And there also there were stones lying and there was no door. Prabhupada was very annoyed, very, very angry. What is this? How can we open such a place? How can we open the temple? And we have invited people from all over the world. Then he called. That time, Sarabhi Prabhu's wife, she ran to her house to pray to Krishna to save Sarabhi from Prabhupada's anger. He came. Prabhupada asked Gurudas Prabhu also, what is this? So they were saying, Prabhupada, I had told you that the temple will not be fully complete. It will only be partly complete. And then the other disciples also were saying, Prabhupada, we have invited people from worldwide, but we don't think we'll be able to open. And Prabhupada is saying, we have given the date of Janmashtami and a few days are there. Then Prabhupada asked, at least can the altar be ready for Janmashtami? And then they were saying, no. He said, the Gurudas Prabhu said, at least it will take 3 months even to make the altar ready. You have to make it. So Prabhupada was very, very disappointed. So he was really scolding. He said, it's a fiasco. It's a farce. You have said you are going to make it. You have simply cheated. You never wrote to me like this. And then Prabhupada said, it's never going to happen. And he said, send immediately information to everyone all around the world that the temple is not going to open in Janmashtami time. Otherwise, all of them will waste so much money and energy to come here. All the way. So and then Prabhupada went to his quarters. When he went to his quarters, then all the disciples followed him. That Prabhupada still had some hope. He again called Gurudas Prabhu and Sarabhi and asked, at least can you try? You think Janmashtami time the altar will be ready at least? You can make it ready. Then again Prabhupada came out and asked, okay, where is the deity room door? He said, Prabhupada, the carpenters are now only beginning the work. You know, they are cutting the wood and everything. He was saying. Then he called Yamuna Mataji. Actually, Yamuna Mataji in those days was very afraid. She was not, because she saw Prabhupada's transcendental anger mood. And she was almost in a hiding. And Prabhupada called her, call Yamuna here. Because she was supposed to take care of the deity room. I mean, the deity and the dresses and paraphernalia and everything for the deity. So he asked Gurudas Prabhu, why Yamuna is not coming nowadays? She is not showing up. And then she also expressed, Prabhupada, you know, I was very afraid, you are in an angry mood. So Prabhupada quoted the pastime of Balaram calling Yamuna to come. He said, if Yamuna doesn't come, Balaram said, I'll put a plow and I'll call Yamuna. He said, so indirectly he said, one should never fear the spiritual master. Even if one is chastised, one should not avoid the association of the spiritual master. So he asked Yamuna Mataji, what happened to the deity? What happened to the paraphernalia? So she was telling, Prabhupada, deity room is not ready, the throne is not ready, how can we bring the deity here? And Prabhupada asked her, so what is your opinion about this? She said, I am a woman, Prabhupada, I don't know any management in the temple. What idea can I, opinion can I give you? But Prabhupada, if you honestly ask me, I can tell you, we will not be able to open for Janmashtami time. And Prabhupada was very disappointed hearing that. In this way, nothing was ready. And Prabhupada said, but then he called the managers and asked Gurudas Prabhu and all, but you have given invitation to all the people in Vrindavan. The Vajabhasis already know we are going to open the temple for Janmashtami. And Gurudas Prabhu very confidently said, no Prabhupada, don't worry, nobody will come. Nobody will come. How do you confidently say that? You have not given any invitation. He said, oh, Prabhupada said, that is very good. You have not given an invitation to anyone. And this is the way you are opening the temple in Janmashtami. And he told all the disciples, just see, now they are going to open this temple for Janmashtami. See how it is lying. Everything is lying everywhere. So Prabhupada was sarcastic at that time. So, and of course, after Gurudas Prabhu was chastised, Gurudas Prabhu and Yamuna Mataji, they thought for some time we will go for some yatra and come back. For some time they proceeded like that. Thereafter, because nothing was moving. Then Prabhupada personally took it on his own hands. He said, then Gunanatha Prabhu was very quite calm. He understood that Prabhupada's anger is, anger makes sense because we have promised him and we have not done our job. We have been neglectful. We have been careless. So he told Prabhupada, the problem is, as soon as there is cement, we will be able to complete the whole project in 3 months. But we are not able to get cement. And Prabhupada told him that in India, people will cheat you because you are all Americans. They will certainly cheat you. You should never get cheated. Why you are not able to get cement? And then Prabhupada found out that the devotees were trying for cement here and there. In fact, just before Prabhupada came, they had got some cement and, you know, they had made a reinforced bars pillar. And the pillar was completely wet for 5 days, 4 or 5 days. After 5 days, it collapsed. It was all full of sand only. It was not cement. The Prabhupada observed all this and said, now I am personally there. Then I made them arrangements to order cement from faraway places and get it. And the cement bag started coming. And Gudanaku was there. Prabhupada said, right from morning 8 o'clock to night 9:30, he was counting the cement bags. Gudanaku was counting. And Prabhupada told him, take a pen and pad. And note down everything. And he was standing outside a godown kind of place. And cement bags were coming. And they would come in intermittent periods, you know. One batch of bags would come. And after 1 hour, other bags would come. And in between, Prabhupada would come and see the cement bags coming. Time will come and supervise and go. The night, Prabhupada asked him, so how many bags have come? And he told the quantity. And Prabhupada said, so you were personally present to verify every bag that came? I said, yes. Bring the log, Prabhupada said. And Prabhupada personally put the log. And he was preserving the cement as if somebody is protecting gold. You know. So he personally took the management on his hands, Prabhupada. And then everyone there in Vrindavan understood, because Prabhupada has taken it. Cement bags were not coming for the last 1 year. And then within a few days, God knows where from so many hundreds of thousands of bags were coming there. Because Prabhupada knew that. Prabhupada took it upon his own head, the whole management that time. So in this way, this anger of Prabhupada is very beautifully explained by Satsuprasad Maharaj with various lessons that he teaches through this pastime of Prabhupada exhibiting anger in Vrindavan. Firstly, he explains that Prabhupada as a pure devotee of the Lord had a great ambition to serve Krishna. A pure devotee also has ambition. It's not that a pure devotee has no ambition. His ambition to serve Krishna. He had promised the Lord that I will offer you a beautiful temple for Janmashtami. And he had promised his spiritual master, Bhagavan Saraswati, that for Janmashtami you will open this international temple where American boys and girls would come and render service and whole Vrindavan will come to see. So here Prabhupada experienced a transcendental lamentation and transcendental frustration that due to negligence of his disciples. That's one thing he explains. And also he explains, Prabhupada's service to Krishna and the divine plane, transcendental plane, is actually made possible by the instruments who are his disciples. Correct? But whenever you find that one of the instruments that you have is not cooperating with you, that certainly causes you frustration, isn't it? Just like, for example, your hand or leg is not functioning properly. It's a part of your body. You are not able to take the food in the hand and put in the mouth. Hand is not ready to, you know, close. So you feel a kind of frustration. In the same way, Prabhupada saw that he has a great bubbling enthusiasm to serve Krishna. But his disciples, who are supposed to act as perfect instruments in his hand, in his transcendental loving service to his Guru and Krishna, they were not cooperative. And they were irresponsible and neglectful and careless. That caused him great transcendental lamentation. So, it is the neglect on the part of the disciples. Prabhupada said, you people don't know how to manage. For example, he was telling about Gurudas Prabhu, about the guest houses he was selling. He was talking about one businessman who was having another guest house nearby. So he was giving at cheaper prices. But in our ISKCON land, the guest houses, which were also sometimes rented for outside people, they were actually rented for very high price. Prabhupada said, you don't know what is business. In business, for example, CD. If you sell a CD at 500 rupees, 1000 rupees, what will happen? The sales would be very less and a lot of people would copy. But you sell a CD at 30 rupees or 50 rupees, then your sales would be so high you can make millions of rupees with that. That requires some business intelligence. Because if you sell it at 50 rupees, although the CD costs only 10 rupees, people won't mind buying at 50. But you sell it at 500 rupees, then people would simply copy and you will not have any business. One person will buy and he will make a good business by making copies and selling at cheaper price. So Prabhupada is telling that you people don't know the ways of business. He found that his disciples were incompetent in many material techniques and tactics. And And also, they were very slow. They were very negligent. Some of them were irresponsible. And Prabhupada, this is second thing he says. Thirdly, he says, Prabhupada didn't like disciples simply cheering up the guru. You know, cheering up. Hari bol, don't worry, everything will be alright. Hari bol. Not doing a thing, but sentimentally cheering up. He didn't like that. And many disciples were very sentimentally surrounding Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Shri Prabhupada, and you know, they always wanted to, you know, be with Prabhupada. Prabhupada didn't like it. Prabhupada demanded practical action. He wanted devotees to be dynamic, doing action. He said, where is the result? What have you shown? You promised me something and you have not done it. So that is one of the lessons he says. So because of that, Prabhupada was very upset. Why the disciples are simply pampering me but not doing their duty. So that is one of the things he says. And also he explains that this transcendental frustration or lamentation of Prabhupada is not imaginary. It is not some drama that Prabhupada performed to instruct his disciples, but it was real. Because the pain that a devotee feels in the heart for Krishna, or the Yashoda, for example, feeling anxiety for Krishna is actually real. It's transcendental, but yet it is real in the heart of a devotee. Devotee experiences it. And anyone who was there present at the time of Prabhupada, they could see that. Prabhupada's anger was superficial, like the waves in the ocean which are superficial. Down deep the ocean is very grave. Similarly, down deep inside the heart, Prabhupada's heart was lamenting that we could not open it. And Prabhupada actually asked, okay, you are saying in 3 months if cement comes you can do it. So Prabhupada says, can we open in Diwali time? And they were all looking at one another. And then one devotee said, Prabhupada, you can open on Bhaksan Saraswati's appearance day in December. And Prabhupada wasn't very happy. And then after long discussion, Prabhupada understood that they are not going to make it ready until next Ram Navami. Ram Navami which will come in April. And then when they made a calculation of time for different aspects of the project, then Prabhupada understood they will take next Janmashtami. And then Prabhupada sarcastically said, okay, so the project will happen either in 3 months or it will happen by next Janmashtami, okay? Prabhupada told them. So, Prabhupada would sometimes sarcastically chastise his disciples. For an ordinary person who does not understand the depth of the heart of a Vaishnava, so these things may be bewildering to see how can a pure devotee like Prabhupada may become angry. But actually, a pure devotee is serving the Lord and he is always situated on a transcendental platform, pure platform. And Satyavrata Maharaj writes there how the anger of a pure devotee is the greatest fortune for the disciple and for the followers, because without that volcanic eruption, we are never going to reform in our lives. So, in this way, on a material platform, he is equipoised. Sukha, dukkha, shita, ushna, man, apaman, they never hurt him. On a spiritual platform, when it comes to serving the Lord, because Prabhupada had promised Krishna. So when Krishna is not served properly, then Prabhupada became angry. And see that. So this is second level of anger. Third level of anger, Prabhupada would not speak at all, isn't it? So when Prabhupada once returned to India in Delhi and was supposed to come to Vrindavan, once one of the disciples was driving the car. It was a costly car, Mercedes or something. He was driving it. So he, I think, was going from Vrindavan to Delhi, I think, and then to go abroad, I think. So another devotee was supposed to take the car back. So this devotee told the other devotee that I will teach you different aspects of the car. You know, how to press this. Actually, the other devotee knew driving, but this car was a little peculiar with certain parts in different places. So this driving devotee was actually telling him different things. And Prabhupada was sitting on the back side. So while he was showing the devotee and talking to him like this, there was a bullock cart going on the front, which his devotee, driver devotee didn't notice it. So he was going at a good speed also. When he came very close, suddenly he realized, here is a bullock cart just about 5 feet away. So he put a sudden brake immediately. That led to the skidding of the car. The car was skidding. The car was skidding like this and going ahead. But then still the car wasn't stopping at all. It was about to have a head-on collision. So he turned the steering. And then the side of the car, it went and hit the wheel of the bullock cart. And completely the wheel took off. And it started rolling and it went and fell ahead. And the whole bullock cart, it toppled like this. And all the people who were sitting in that along with their vessels and things and different things, they all toppled on the ground. They were rolling on the ground. Nobody knows whether anybody was smashed under the car. So this devotee who was driving had been living in India for some time. He knew very well that in India, if some accident takes place, people will not leave the driver easily. They will pull him out and they'll beat him to death practically. This is only in India, they say. Nowhere it happens in the world. That's why motor cars are not suitable for India. So that fellow knew the driver. So immediately he rushed. So because the side of the car hit the wheel, so because of that the whole glass on which the Prabhupada said was, of course the glass didn't break, but because the glass was touched by the wheel, it completely became like opaque, almost opaque, except the top little portion, which was transparent. One has to peer through that to see outside. It was like that. And the door got completely jammed also, this side and that side of the car. And Prabhupada was sitting on the back side, you can imagine. There was a big sound and the door came little inside also like this. And then Prabhupada was saying to himself, "Oh, just see the way he is driving." He was saying to himself, he didn't say anyone. And then he was completely calm. The other devotee thought, now after going back, Prabhupada is going to give a solid dose to this driver devotee. And this devotee rushed very fast so that nobody would come. Of course, nobody died in that accident. It only caused the breakage of the wheel and everything. Then they reached Delhi and Prabhupada took off. Prabhupada didn't speak a word at all. But clearly one could see Prabhupada was deeply upset. And in such times the devotees would feel more pain than when Prabhupada would chastise them. Because for example, sometimes it is said the silence is more powerful than the sword, it is said. Like somebody becomes angry at you and they shout at you on your face, you know. Of course you become little upset. But somebody comes to know that you have done some wrong and they keep silent and they look with big, big eyes at you and they show their face of disappointment, isn't it? That causes terrible pain. And then the person may go and tell, you know, Prabhupada, please tell me, you know, Prabhupada, please chastise me. Tell me what you want to say. He wouldn't speak a word. That would cause... Because you imagine when you think, how much is he angry, you want to know. Well, when a person speaks out, you can come to know. If he doesn't speak, then you don't know, you know, to what extent is he angry. Or if he at least expresses his anger, I can give some reason. So there was third level of anger of Prabhupada. So, Prabhupada's transcendental anger produced great results. When Prabhupada, like for example, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the devotees brought out in 2 months. And Prabhupada was behind them. Some of the devotees said who were drawing the paintings for Chaitanya Charitamrita, while painting only they will go to sleep. They would do the painting and they would go to sleep and they would wake up and see. Again they would continue painting. So our Gopi Purananda Prabhu was telling, they were working 18 hours a day. Minimum. Many times. They said we would get up in the morning, we would chant our rounds and get to work immediately. All day. You can imagine how the printing process and, you know, when Samarakshan Maharaj was selling Prabhupada once, Prabhupada, we are ahead of the BBT. You know, I mean, he said, we are ahead of the people of printing books, BBT, he said. Prabhupada said, how? He said, Prabhupada, whatever books they printed, we have distributed. See, we have made the godown empty. And then, they are still printing, the books have not come, he said. Prabhupada said, I am ahead of you and BBT, Prabhupada said. Samarakshan Maharaj asked, how? See, already 2-3 cantos are waiting. They have not yet printed it. So Prabhupada encouraged such a speed. That is how you can imagine in 12 years, Prabhupada encircled the globe 14 times and he could do so much. So Prabhupada actually, the disciples, although they felt on one hand fear, they had a fear mixed with love for Prabhupada. That's the kind of love they felt. Yeah, Prabhupada used to tell them whenever such things would happen, Prabhupada once told them, Krishna consciousness is like a hot sugarcane juice, Prabhupada once said. Because hot sugarcane juice, you know, when you drink it, it's very hot. Or something like garamalu, you know garamalu? Garamalu, you know garamalu? Hot potato, yeah. hot potato you put in the mouth, it's very hot. No, it's very hot like that. At the same time, you know, if it becomes totally cold, you know, you eat it, it's not very, there's no fun eating a cold potato. But when it's hot potato you put in the mouth, it's hot also, a little smoke is coming out, you know, put it in the mouth, it's very tasty also. So Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness drags one to the ultimate success. Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Instruction. So, when Prabhupada was there, in many temples there were 500 devotees, 400 devotees, sometimes. I got a new one now, there were 800 devotees. Even London also, Dhanavir Maharaj writes in that Fortunate Souls, you can read that book, practically hundreds and hundreds of devotees. And Prabhupada was, even the Grihastha devotees, when they would come to temple, they never felt like going home. They wanted to serve in the temple. Like one elderly disciple of Prabhupada came. He came and told Prabhupada. He had a very sunken face. And told Prabhupada. And he came with his son. And he said, Prabhupada, my wife has passed away. He said, now I went home to see that and came. Now I have come back. He said. And Prabhupada looked at him and looked at his son. He said, okay, you take sannyas and make your son your brahmachari assistant. And both of you go out and preach. You know, so you can see he is Balaram's representative. So Prabhupada had the Nityananda Avesh, as predicted by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself and by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas. So he was preaching like that. And of course the people whom he molded, like Tamalakrishna Maharaj, Prabhupada used to chastise him like anything, but Tamalakrishna Maharaj became, in fact, he was supposed to be the GBC in India, but then Prabhupada had taken him to America. He said, you are so good, I want you to carry with me wherever I go. He put him, and he started the Radha Damodar bus party. And what kind, the Radha Damodar bus party, it's a miracle. What kind of distribution they did. It's, you know, if you hear the kind of reports. So, Prabhupada used to call our movement is a pushing movement. I push all of you and you push others. And in this way, Krishna Bhakti, Krishna Prema will flood the whole world. And time is short. Our resources are limited. And so, ordinary materialist may, when he sees this type of anger in a devotee, he may misunderstand often. But devotees know. Prabhupada's heart is full of love for Krishna. And any chastisement that he gives is out of pure concern, out of a desire to instruct the disciples, and or make them experts and not getting cheated by the people, or not waste Krishna's money. And Prabhupada never kept anything in his mind. He never would quote again. He would never remember. One last example I would like to conclude. Once Satyadana Maharaj had sent, he was his secretary, Prabhupada's secretary. So he was supposed to send a letter with a attached copy of the previous letter, attached carbon copy of a previous letter. So he, from America, he sent this letter to India. And then Gurudas Prabhu wrote a letter back to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, you have sent me a letter where you have written that you have attached a copy of the previous letter. But I don't find that attachment. You know, sometimes how many of you have experienced, you write in the mail, I am sending attachment, and you forget to send attachment. Correct? So he did some mistake, similar mistake. And Prabhupada became angry. Prabhupada called him. So he came, he shouted, why didn't you send the attachment? And then he was saying, Prabhupada, I forgot, Prabhupada. How can you forget? He was asking. And then he said, no, Prabhupada, I searched in the files, somebody has misplaced it somewhere. I said, because I couldn't get it at that time. Later on I forgot to send it. He was telling Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, but how can you not search it later on? How can you not tell me? And then I said, sorry, Prabhupada. No, Prabhupada wasn't satisfied at all. His anger was increasing more. Then Prabhupada was asking. He actually, what Satyadana Maharaj thought, if I tell Prabhupada these things, Prabhupada may become pacified and I can cool him down. But then the more he gave reasons and justification, Prabhupada became more angry by that. And Prabhupada said, still Prabhupada was saying, how can somebody say that I am attaching a letter and not attach a letter? Is it not a sign of foolishness? Now Gurudas is writing to me, he is thinking that I have sent him a letter, saying that I have a letter and I am not attaching. What kind of letter is this? So very angry. Actually something similar happened in my case also. One of the devotees in IYF, In those days we had this thin essence of Bhagavad Gita, you know, the thin book, in the 1996. So he had sent that book. So that book, as soon as you take that book, the whole book is crumbling, you know, the cover is coming out, you know, it's like that. And not only that, if you see the book inside, half of the pages are white, you know, inside, many of the pages. So this devotee, what he did, he wrote a letter saying that to Delhi or somewhere he was sending this book along with the covering letter. So he wrote that, and I am sending this, the copy of the Bhagavad Gita, you wanted this book, I am sending this book. And then he said, your servant, and he wrote Radhesham, and that day I was in Bombay or somewhere, so he himself signed Radhesham Das. And so he himself signed and he sent this. So that person phoned me and said, Rajampu, I know that you are very busy, you know, but not so busy to send me a book like this, which is crumbling into pieces, you know, which is coming out and which is having, you know, half of the book is white pages, you know. And four or five mistakes he wrote in the book, you know, these were the things, you know, I saw in the book you have sent like this. So it seems that these days you are too busy, you know. So he called me like this. And then I said, which book, you know, what are you talking? I didn't even know. Then I called this devotee and asked, he said, yes, Prabhuji, I only sent. Then first question I asked him, whose name did you sign? Because I sent in your name, sir. See, you are really a fool. I said, you are writing a letter and why are you putting my signature? You understand, no? So, what Satyavrata Maharaj did, he wrote a letter in Prabhupada's name and Prabhupada signed it, but he failed to send the attachment. You understand, no? So Prabhupada chastised him. That means you are making me a fool. Then Satyavrata Maharaj thought about it deeply and then he came back to Prabhupada and said, okay Prabhupada, now I will write a letter to Gurudas Prabhu saying that I only forgot to send the attachment because I could not find it. And now I am sending the attachment and I will put the attachment and then I will again resend the letter. Is it all right? And then Prabhupada said, perfect, do it, Prabhupada said. Then Prabhupada became very happy after that. And Prabhupada never ever mentioned it in future, he says, even once in future. Because we all have a tendency, when somebody commits a mistake, sometimes we keep telling other people, correct? You know, he did the mistake, we keep telling everyone. Or sometimes in future we re-quote it, trying to incite the anger in that person, correct? But he says Prabhupada never ever quoted it, Prabhupada just forgot it completely. After that, because Prabhupada wanted devotees to rectify whenever he would give an instruction. Excuses would not work. They have to rectify the situation. They have to admit the fault, surrender and rectify. Prabhupada wanted that. So in this way, the transcendental anger of a devotee can be understood to be productive. It is certainly productive. And we cannot imitate this anger in our lives. We have to see what is the result when we become angry, whether it is productive or it is destructive. Anger in general in this world is destructive. But the pure devotee's anger is all auspicious. And it is meant for the welfare of the disciple. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki? Bhagavad Bhaktavinda ki?